Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dubot with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Judy Barr Topinka and Chris Voronis, and Democrats Dan Johnson Weinberger and Joellen Lind of Valparaiso University School of Law. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Barack Obama is on foreign soil. He's touring the troops. He's reaching out to improve his bona fides in foreign policy. And for much of tonight's program, we're going to be talking not only about what he's said thus far, the way the media is covering this trip, and what John McCain can do to maybe get a little fairer shake in the national news media coverage. And joining one of our guests this evening is Judy Barr Topinka. Judy, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Always
former
good.
Republican leader in the state of Illinois. Always nice to have you with us. And the troops are near and dear to you. Your son is a career military guy.
Right, right.
When Barack Obama goes to see the troops, is he doing a good thing for himself by doing this? Or is there the possibility that he's raising the bar a little bit too much, and can he slip?
Well, first of all, he almost has to do this, whether he likes it or not, to give, if nothing else, the impression that he cares, that he knows something about the military, he knows something about what's going on in Afghanistan.
And McCain suggested it. Is it possible? Is this going to blow up in McCain's face?
And
maybe
and
he's going to hit a
he might be very, very good at it. You know, he could be very, very good at it. But if he slips, and if this looks like wholesale pandering, and if this looks like he's doing it and not sincere about his, that it's very political, as opposed to genuine caring and an understanding of what's going on here, you know, in terms of foreign affairs and relations, it could blow him away. So he's going to have to walk very, very carefully on this.
Joellen Lind also joins us. She is with the Valparaiso University School of Law, one of the associate deans and a professor there.
Right.
Joellen, making her first visit. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
You're a supporter of Barack Obama. Is there any part of this trip that you're a little worried about? Because, again, when the entire world is focusing on you, you can easily slip on a banana and hurt yourself.
Well, I think he has a real challenge because McCain has higher polling numbers for national security. But I think this could actually be win-win for him because he has to meet the challenge. At the same time, he's taking all the attention away from McCain's economic plan, which he announced and had some trouble with regard to Phil Graham and so forth. So it looks to me like he can improve his position, and he's really getting center stage. The eye is really on him.
I'll get the PR, that's for sure. You
no
can't
question
beat
about
the PR.
That. Pretty, Chris Voronis also joins us, speaking of PR, a professional PR guy and a Republican also. My question to you is, it seems to me that this is a situation where Barack Obama can kind of have it both ways. He's going to Iraq. He's reminding people, and people are constantly reminding him as well, that he opposed the war. He certainly wants a timetable for withdrawal. There's some controversy involving that. And yet, part of his public record is he's always talked about the importance of Afghanistan. He's already been to Afghanistan, where he says we need a sense of urgency and determination, and he wants to send more troops there, and that this is where the center of the battle against the war on terrorism should be. So it's pretty hard, it seems to me, for anyone to paint him as a dove because of his hawkish talk on Afghanistan. So isn't he ending up having it both ways?
It's going to take more than one visit to burnish Barack Obama's credibility on foreign policy. He just might want to bunk with the troops for a month or so. I mean, that might go further for his credibility. As Joellen said, John McCain does have the clear lead on who would be the better commander-in-chief. So very early, one visit is not going to make a whole lot of difference. He needed to do this, as Judy said.
He almost got pushed into it by McCain.
There's a lot more to the campaign.
Dan Johnson Weinberger is our other Democrat tonight. Dan, nice to have you with us.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. And I'll say this. This is why Barack's going to win, because he went to Afghanistan. And most of the American people are coming to see that George Bush's ridiculous mistake was invading Iraq, which had nothing to do with the war on terror and made us less safe. And as the country comes around to Barack's point of view, which he held in 2002, that's why he's going to win. Because the country doesn't want to continue the massive strategic blunder of invading and occupying and collapsing Iraq.
But his supporters on the left, Joelle, I want to get your reaction. Those supporters on the left who don't like the idea of the war in Iraq, I mean, how is it going to play when he continues to talk about, let's send more troops to Afghanistan? I mean, is there a lot of support for that, Joelle?
I think it's totally consistent, as Dan is saying, with the position he's taken over the last few years.
But how does the hard left of the party feel about that? Because you're still putting
troops in harm's way.
They feel great.
Let's let Joellen respond.
It's people, I think, have always made a distinction between Afghanistan and Iraq in the left of the Democratic Party. They're not idiots. They understand where al-Qaeda comes from.
Right.
And that we never, ever got Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And so he's putting us back on point.
Those are where the bad guys are.
I don't think that they make the differentiation as much as you think. We have people in America who can't even tell you where Texas is, let alone where Afghanistan is or Iraq is. It gets muddled in terms of war. They don't want war. They want the troops to come home now. And they expect him to bring those troops home now. And he also jumps it up by basically coming back to that position of saying, well, if al-Qaeda keeps going across the border to Pakistan, we're going to go after them over there. And now you're really ginning it up. You're going to a country that is theoretically our ally.
But here's my point, Judy. Yeah. Hasn't there been enough tough talk that it's going to be very difficult to paint Barack Obama as some softy left-wing dove?
No, I mean, he'll look hawkish, but I think the hard left of the Democratic Party doesn't want a hawk. They've had enough of George Bush. This is their big trump card.
But I'm talking, what about the independents in the middle? Again, the people who want a president who they believe in, they want a president who's going to protect them, and yet his rhetoric, there's just enough rhetoric out there where he's a saber rattler.
But it's more.
I mean, in Pakistan, he's been rattling the sable. Sabers.
I think Barack Obama's smart enough not to be pigeonholed as a dove, and I don't think that's how McCain's going to go after him. It's going to be experience versus no experience in foreign policy. And I love that Dan has finally come around to being for ideas of the surge, Obama has.
He scrubbed his website of anything
opposing the surge. So it's great.
I'm glad
we are moving forward on that front.
I'm glad that the president has come around to Barack's position on engaging with Iran, and I'm glad that the president's
Barack Obama's come around
to
the president's position on FISA, on guns.
Importantly, in Iraq is that there's now a consensus on a timetable for withdrawal. Now that the Iraqis have said that's what we want, I'm glad the president
decided to come on. 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse. How do you feel about the trip? How do you feel it's been playing thus far? Whether you're a strong supporter of Barack Obama or someone that thinks he's not ready for prime time, how's he doing so far? And what can McCain do to get back in the media picture? Back shortly from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to Valparaiso, Indiana, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. We'll go to calls in just a moment. I was talking about Barack Obama's statements, in Afghanistan, and also, as we all know, most of the major network media anchors are following this, and we're going to talk about the media coverage in a moment. But today on Face the Nation, Barack Obama had this to say. The situation, talking about Afghanistan now, the situation is precarious and urgent here in Afghanistan, and I believe this has to be our central focus, the central front in our battle against terrorists. If we wait until the next administration, it could be a year before we get those troops on the ground. So as part of his recommendation is that the troops that he wants pulled out of Iraq, he wants those, not necessarily the exact troops, but the same number of troops, a couple of brigades, to then go into Afghanistan. That's about an additional 7,000 troops there. So, again, this is where he's at this particular moment. Insofar as it is obviously for security reasons, they have not stated exactly when he's going to be going into Baghdad. But when he talked about going there, this is what he had to say. Quote, "I'm looking forward to seeing what the situation on the ground is. I want to obviously talk to the commanders and get a sense, both in Afghanistan and in Baghdad, of, what the most, the biggest concerns are. And I want to thank our troops for the heroic work that they've been doing." End of quote, Barack Obama. What is he likely to find? I mean, one of the criticisms of the trip thus far, Dan, is that obviously, John McCain suggested that he went there, and he's now... Again, I think this McCain may regret suggesting that.
I think Barack takes good ideas wherever they come from,
and he does, and he generally knows what to do with them.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, he gave another foreign policy speech, talking about the timetable for withdrawal last week, and yet he makes this big speech before he goes to find out what the facts are. I mean, is there any fact that he can find out on this trip that would make him think twice about his call for either a withdrawal or the number of people that are coming back or the 16 months? I mean, it seems to me that he's already made up his mind and that no matter what he's told, it's not going to change anything.
Well, I think the big picture strategy, from my perspective, I don't really see how hearing directly from the commanders is going to change the big picture strategy of our approach to the war on terror. I mean, I think it's just crystal clear. Afghanistan's the central front. Iraq never was. And that was the strategic mistake that we're going to correct in January.
Do you think Petraeus is going to tell him that? But is he going to hear that from commanders?
I don't.
Folks, hey, I'm going to tell you something, Barack. Senator, excuse me.
Right.
Mr. President-elect, to be in waiting.
Right.
We made a really big mistake there. I mean, does he think that a commander is going to say that,
Joelle? I just don't think that's the way military people communicate.
Of course not.
I come from a military family myself. And
born in Hawaii, like Barack Obama.
Absolutely.
Did you know him back there?
No.
Okay. Just
same hospital?
I'm actually a little older than he is, but I won't tell you by how much. But To me, the thing he needs to try to figure out is exactly how the surge might really be affecting the long-term stability of relations there. I mean, one of the reasons why maybe I'm good to be on this show is because I've spent a lot of time arguing with my relatives about these issues, so I can bring you. And my mother is convinced that the only reason violence has gone down in Iraq is because we're literally paying people to work for us. Now, I don't know if she's imagining that. I don't know if she's a conspiracy theorist. But I don't know how much of the surge really has to do with the kinds of things that we're doing that might have long-lasting stabilizing results.
But again,
there.
From a political standpoint, I mean, just, I realize you're here for Barack Obama,
right.
So is Dan. But, once upon a time, when the American people had already weighed in that they were turning on this war and the popularity of this war was declining very, very fast, John McCain decided that he was going to stand up in the United States Senate, begin to speak out against his president, his party,
right.
Basically call on mismanagement, and suggesting at a time when everybody wanted to talk about timetables and moving the troops out, he stood up, and basically said, "No, we need more troops here." Now, again, as a as someone who looks at politics and as an American and as someone who measures character, I mean, doesn't that count? I mean, history has proven John McCain right on this issue, hasn't it?
I'm not sure.
What about the moment? What about saying what he did when he said it?
Absolutely courageous for him to do it. I wish he would continue distancing himself from George Bush, and he isn't. But to me, his whole point is, his pitch is that success in Iraq is the thing that makes it possible for us to maybe be successful in Afghanistan. He's got it just backwards, yeah.
Chris. Osama bin Laden could walk into Kabul and surrender, and it wouldn't change Barack Obama's position on the war in Afghanistan or Iraq. It doesn't matter. This was done purely for optics. He needed to do this, and he needed to get it behind him because he had an exposed flank. I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, you talk about Iraq being the place where everything is going to, you know, rise or fall. The situation has stabilized there immensely. And that's largely attributable to, as you say, Bruce, the policy that John McCain championed by himself.
Well, Chris, what does that mean in terms of troop strength that Americans are going to have to commit themselves to with regard to Iraq? I mean, my understanding is the troop strength isn't really something we want to have go down below about 140,000 troops. So the surge can't last forever. We're going to keep American troops there for how long? How many are we going to keep there?
The surge is winding down. And I think you're hearing some comments out of the White House about that.
Right.
Something may be coming up before November.
And the surge
November.
Was going to wind Maybe. Down. It wasn't going to be a forever
it
thing.
It was always meant to be temporary. Yeah. And now we're talking about potential surge in Afghanistan, which could be necessary and could turn that situation around, too.
But, Chris,
Dan, I want to ask you the same question I asked Joe Ellen.
Yeah.
As a political operative, Would you have advised John McCain to do what he did when he did it?
I think that's
as a political advisor. Would you have said, you know, Senator, I think you got to get out in the you got to go out there all by yourself and suggest something else that the Gallup poll is suggesting 75% of the American people are against.
Well, look,
you should do that.
I'll say nice things about John McCain. I think he always speaks his mind. I don't think he's a finger wagger. I think he goes in the direction that he believes in. I think that's admirable.
What's Obama's moment of courage? What is his?
How about when the entire world when the drums of war are beating down hard and the whole country's afraid to say anything that smells like dissent because you'll be deemed unpatriotic, to say this war in Iraq is a dumb war. And I'm not against
all wars.
Easy to
say that from the safety of Springfield. I mean, hardly.
You can't find a lot of people who are willing to say it from anywhere.
Judy, what about that? Is that a profile in courage?
At the time he said it, it was very easy to say that. I mean, you could say anybody on the street could say that.
He was running in a Democratic primary.
Right. And so he could come up with that. I don't think it carries as much weight as if he were already a seated senator, had to take a vote on it, and then, you know, put his money where his mouth was. It was just in passing. So I don't think he's had that huge moment of history, that new moment of destiny.
In reality, let's granted that the positions were a little bit different. Do we have an example with each of these candidates that maybe they were a little more perceptive than
the average bear?
Than the average bear.
Both I think so. Oh, yes, right. Both were. And
John McCain's a very smart man, right? He's a good senator. He's not a bad guy. But I think the substance of the question is, as Chris suggested, Afghanistan is not the central fund in the war of terror. That's Senator McCain's position. Senator Obama's position is Afghanistan is a central fund in terror.
Let's go to Greg, listening to us on the south side of Chicago on WLS. Go ahead, Greg. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. So Senator Obama has postured that the situation in Afghanistan is urgent and precarious. Can your Democratic strategists please explain which cities in Afghanistan have been taken by the Taliban, which areas of Afghanistan are under the control of the Taliban, and what resources have the Taliban taken that endanger the country?
Well, I just heard the dogs of war coming at us.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm scared immediately.
Well, maybe we could start by pointing out that actually Senator McCain is not that far from Senator Obama's position when he talks just about Afghanistan. He's recommending about the same number of troops to go in there. The real difference is the link he makes between Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, we just had a forward position of our troops overrun and a bunch of people killed in an area that used to be secure. And I think the whole point is this is going to be a stronghold for Al-Qaeda to launch whatever it wants to, wherever it wants to, as we had before.
Greg, by the way, we should just mention that Senator Obama is not alone in making the assessment that things, you know, may be going the wrong way in Afghanistan. U.S. military officials say that the number of attacks in eastern Afghanistan, where most of the U.S. forces in the country have been operating, there's been a 40% increase so far this year compared to last year. So, again, whereas things appear to be, at least statistically, getting better in Iraq, statistically, they're getting worse in Afghanistan. So Obama is stating that, but he's basically stating the obvious based on basically what everyone else is saying. Thanks very much for your call. 1-800-723-8029. We continue from coast to coast and border to border with your calls, talking about Barack Obama, his trip, and also the profiles in Courage, whether Barack Obama and John McCain have both had a moment, at least in talking candidly about their position. And were they right? Was Barack Obama right when he said he opposed the war in Iraq? And was John McCain right when he suggested that the policy had been screwed up and we needed a surge? Back shortly from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. We'll be right back. From Boston, Massachusetts to Tallahassee, Florida, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on some of America's great radio stations, including XM Satellite Radio. And joining us tonight, we have Jo Ellen Lynn. She is an associate professor at Valparaiso University School of Law,
right.
Born in Honolulu, Hawaii, but raised around the country. Her dad was in the military, and again, making her first visit here, and she is a supporter of Barack Obama. Judy Bartopinka joins us. She was the Republican candidate for governor last time out in the state of Illinois, and a three-term member of the as state treasurer and one of the leading lights in the Republican Party. I said as if it was a past situation. In fact, are you still thinking about possibly running again?
Oh, I don't know. Right now I've got to get through the convention. You know, I'm a super delegate in terms of Democrat terms, mm-hmm. so I'll be going out there. I'm still a committeeman in my township, you know, make sure the vote gets out, and I'm still out trying to recruit candidates and save what I can.
So you are not saying no? You were not saying no to
another run. I don't think a politician should ever say no to anything like that. You know, keep an open mind. You never know what comes your way.
Would you be interested in a position, an appointed position, if John McCain were elected president?
Well, you know,
States?
I'm on the RTA, which is a regional transportation right. board, which for Illinois is really major because you know that's our forte here in terms of moving things and moving people, and the transportation situation is just you know, urgent, to use Barack's words, urgent and right. touchy and so on. So I mean, I've got enough keeping me busy. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, and you also have your own radio show?
I sure do, which I hope to get you on, trade you off a little bit
I'm,
here.
I'm coming up in the next couple right. of weeks. Dan Johnson Weinberger also joins us. He is a Democratic political consultant and a graduate of the University of Chicago Law School.
That's true.
Northwestern University as well? No, University of Illinois.
That's right.
And University of Illinois, it's where you met Chris Voronis.
That's right.
Who was a Republican, and he is a public relations executive. And the two of you used to do a column in the Daily Illini newspaper,
that's right?
Right?
That's right.
Left-right column, and here you are.
You're
not doing
it. After week, I would embarrass him on the entire campus community, exposing the fallacy of his arguments, and it continues to this day.
It was important for him, for his friends. I let him have a day or two.
Oh, we could have used the two of you at Northwestern. Good gracious.
Well, it's nice to have you all with us tonight, and we're going to take calls in just a moment. But as you have known for the last several weeks, we have reminded you that the balloting for the National Radio Hall of Fame, which was open to everyone listening around the country, the results are now in. And the 2008 inductees into the Radio Hall of Fame this year will include Art Bell, the great founder of the Coast to Coast show, and a man who really opened up and really transformed late-night talk in America. Howie Carr, the great talk show host, afternoon host on WRKO in Boston. Michael Mickey Luckoff, who is really one of the top experts in the country insofar as managers. He was selected by the Radio Hall of Fame Steering Committee. The other inductees were all selected by voters from around the country. Charlie Tuna, one of the great rock and roll disc jockeys in the history of the medium, who has held forth for over 40 years in Los Angeles. And Focus on the Family is our fourth show, winning in the national syndicated category. And again, they joined the posthumous inductees that we announced earlier in this year. Jess Kane, the late broadcaster from Boston, Bob Collins from WGN in Chicago, and Dick Whittinghill of KMPC in Los Angeles. So they will be the inductees into the Radio Hall of Fame, and that's coming up on Saturday night, November 8th. It'll be carried coast to coast on some of America's great radio stations, hopefully some of the ones that you're listening to right now. It'll be held at the Renaissance Hotel in Chicago, and if you'd like more, you can go to the website www.museum.tv, and as you may have read or heard, there has been some controversy about the induction process this year. Some gay rights groups in the country really are offended by the induction of Focus on the Family. However, this was an open ballot. Anyone, the ballots, the names were announced in May of this year. Anyone within the sound of my voice could have voted for any candidate and the four nominees in a particular category. It was open to everyone. If people did not want someone in, there was options that they could have taken for over 3 months to exercise their vote. In any election, there are people who finish first. There are people who finish second. Sometimes if you do not like the person who finishes first, you don't feel real well. But you know what? That's what this is all about. It's about voting. The opportunity was out there. You had an opportunity to vote. The winners are in. They'll be inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame on November 8th in Chicago. Back to calls. Let's go to John, listening to us in Chicago on WLS.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing real well. A little earlier, one of the guests mentions that she wasn't sure that the surge would ever end, that we're going to have this everlasting presence in Iraq. Yet President Bush said in a press conference with Gordon Brown not 2 weeks ago that he wants to pull 30,000 troops out by next July. So if President Bush wants to pull the troops out, what makes the guests think that the surge is going to continue?
Well, the surge was never going to continue. The surge was
short-lived.
Just that. It's a short-lived, you know, a hard-hitting whack, and then they come out. Not to mention that, you know, you couldn't keep that at a surge level because you're going to need those troops elsewhere. I mean, then, you know, our army is really very thinly spread out. It's hard-pressed. It's got a lot of problems here. Short
correct.
Of having a draft,
well, I mean,
we don't have enough people.
That, but
it's not so much that I think the surge per se is going to continue, but just the need to have a certain number of boots on the ground in Iraq for an unlimited period of time, and whether the surge gains will actually be lasting once those troops are removed, whether you then have to put people back in or not.
But also, when you look at it historically, isn't that expected? I mean, given the Second World War, given the Korean War, and given even Bosnia, I mean, when America goes to war, when it's over, it's never really over. I mean, U.S. troops and U.S. taxpayers pay for those troops, so, you know, for over 50 years.
Yeah.
Why is this a surprise that in this year, whether the war was in Afghanistan or in Iraq? I mean, if we switch the troops to Afghanistan, and we get to a point where we think we've won that war, it's going to be pretty hard to define what winning is. But, I mean, those people who oppose, you know, having troops in Iraq for 30, 40, 50 years, they conceivably could be in Afghanistan, could they not? If it keeps the peace, what's the difference?
I think we're going to have Americans there for quite a while, probably, because, frankly, of the mess that George Bush started in Iraq, which has created more problems for us and a mess for the next president to try to fix.
But here's my point. Excuse me for 1 second. One second, John. I want to do a follow-up.
Yeah.
If everything had gone right in Iraq, wouldn't we still have troops on the ground representing the United States? Because that's the MO when America goes to war. What's different? What is the difference between Japan and Germany and Korea and Iraq? What's the difference?
I don't think the American people signed up when the war in Iraq was begun, to have most of our military resources committed to that country for an unlimited period of time, making them vulnerable in the war on terror domestically, making the war in Afghanistan fall apart. So I'm not taking the position that we couldn't have permanent bases in Iraq. I think that might be a possibility. But this is really different. We're talking about having 140,000 troops on the ground there. We're spread so thin that our ability to respond to Iran is no good.
Has Iraq made us weaker domestically?
We're spending too much money in the wrong place.
Yeah, right. If you make a stupid idea from the start to invade and then collapse a country, and then it costs, what is it, $15 or $20 billion a month, the money we could be spending on us.
The problem,
and as Judy said, you are weakening our armed forces, and they're getting weaker in the place where they should be to try
tired.
To get Al Qaeda. That's a problem.
Chris Veronis.
I think the fundamental problem with opponents of the war, and there were real problems, but I think for you guys, you can't look past the initial invasion and look past the reality on the ground that the situation is what it is. We need to figure it out. You can't have a wholesale withdrawal. Even Barack Obama acknowledges that, and that he would leave troops there. Even his position is softening on
folks,
that.
Folks, just so we don't, I don't want to sort of, you know, refight the, you know, the basic
it's
principle
pointless.
There. Because again, at this point, we're talking about where are we now, and what are the options for the future? And again, the question that's before the House, which we're going to go back to, and that is, who is going to be the person who is the president of the United States, and where is that person going to lead us? And are they going to make us safer? And is the world going to react in any different way? Will the world react differently if John McCain or Barack Obama is president? Will our sworn enemies act differently? Does anybody believe that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban will act any differently towards the United States and our forces if one candidate is elected over the other?
I honestly think that they will. Judy, yes, I do in my heart of hearts.
Jake, and I say this really feeling, but both candidates are very honorable. I've been in Illinois politics where I've served with Barack Obama, like him a lot. But I do think that the world will see him as a very untried, callow young fellow, and the Taliban will try whatever they can. I think also, too, we have to deal with what we have. We've got the hand that's dealt to us. No matter how we got there, we're going to have to get out in an orderly fashion, and it's going to be done by whomever, and they're going to have to handle
it. But in your heart, you believe that there's more likelihood of challenging President Obama than
yes.
President McCain.
Yes, I think there is.
I want to get everybody's reaction to that. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. I'm going to ask that question to those people around the table. We got to go to a break, and I'm going to ask those people on the line as well. Do you believe that if John McCain was elected president, it is less likely that we would be challenged in some significant way on the foreign policy stage? 1-800-723-8289. We'll get everybody's answer when we come back from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
We'll be right back.
From Grand Rapids, Michigan to Kern County in California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8290. We're going to go to calls in just a moment, but I want to ask Dan Johnson Weinberger the question I asked Judy before the break, and that is, do you believe that, is there any significant difference in so how our enemies, our terrorist enemies, that they would act any differently if Barack Obama was elected president over John McCain?
I think the result is our enemies, which are Al-Qaeda, are more likely to be dead with President Obama than with President McCain.
Why?
Because President McCain, the central substantive difference between the parties is that we're diverting attention to Iraq, a policy that Senator McCain wants to continue, potentially to Iran.
What about Judy's point that he's young, he's untested,
yeah,
we don't quite know where he is. Now, does that encourage?
I think our enemies want to kill us no matter what. Let's assume that maybe in the back of their minds they think, oh, Barack's new, maybe I'll launch another attack, maybe I'm slightly more likely to do that. Who cares? The point is whether we're putting our military where our enemies live rather than in some diversion in Iraq, in some morass.
Chris, well,
the reality
what's your answer to the question?
Agree with Dan that our enemies want to kill us. Yeah. Regardless of who is in the White House.
Absolutely.
So I agree with you on that.
Me too.
But, you know, I will refer all of us back to 1993, Bill Clinton's first year in the White House, with what happened in Somalia. And that situation was cited by Osama bin Laden. If you bloody the Americans' nose, they will run. And that sent a powerful message to the terrorists about what our reaction was, what happened in Mogadishu.
And the attack on the World Trade Center happened within the first several months of his presidency.
Correct.
Just like George Bush.
9/11.
So again, you got two governors, and they're both challenged in their first year as president. Joe Ellen Lind.
I think that Obama's the much stronger leader here. I think we're much safer. First, he has better judgment. I don't see him as some wimpy guy who just wants to be liked. I think that he's actually pretty tough, especially look at the way he's run his campaign. Look at the way he stays on message. He stays focused.
His judgment on the surge was, I think it was a misjudgment, wasn't it?
Well,
I'm not on board for saying that the surge is an unqualified success for a lot of complicated reasons that are hard to explain sitting right here. But
the problem is you've got no record to point to.
You don't want to say that Iraq is that Iraq was the right decision originally. That's not your position, right?
No, I'm just saying it's impossible to say that Barack Obama is going to be a tougher president. You've got nothing to point to.
On our enemies.
I want to point to something. I want to point to rhetoric. Again, it is rhetoric because that's all we have really on foreign policy.
Right.
That's all we have. But the rhetoric about going into Pakistan.
Yep. Yeah, right.
If there was actionable. Now, again, you know, Hillary Clinton said, you know, even if you believe that, you shouldn't say it, and that represents your naivete. But the point is, in my view, that's the strongest saber-rattling we've heard from a candidate for a long time. Would you acknowledge that?
Sure, but Barack Obama right now only has words on his side. He has no record, no foreign policy experience. And Americans see that with the numbers giving McCain the edge.
Folks, we've got to be going to some calls here. Let's go to Tom in Naperville, Illinois on WLS. You're on the air coast to coast. My question to you, do you think McCain or Obama, is one more likely to be tested by our enemies?
Obama is the biggest paper tiger I've seen in politics in 20 years. This man won't debate McCain. He gets upset with New Yorker magazine parodies. He throws his wife and kids out there on TV, and then he gets upset when he gets criticized. My premise with this man is he is Gumby. He doesn't flip-flop. He stretches, he pulls, he bends himself around the issue, and the press just sits there and cheers him on. This man is awful. He is going to hurt this country, and he owns the word refined. Because I have never seen anybody just stretch and pull the truth, stretch and pull his positions, and get away with it like this clown has.
Joe Ellen is going to respond to you, Tom. Stand by. Joe Ellen.
Well, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think one of the things about Obama is that he tries to talk straight to the American people. He doesn't insult their intelligence.
Like the gun ban?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Like his statement over the gun ruling, it's all right to own guns, but government controls them. His statements about fact-finding trip and before he even goes on the trip, his statements on the public financing, his no to the telecom FISA bill, and then he signs it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of flip-flopping going on by McCain as well.
Look,
but
let me talk about this, because the media narrative of a flip-flop, I think, is absolutely patently false.
Right.
The thing is, Barack is a law professor. He's a nuanced, sophisticated thinker. And so when you talk about the Second Amendment, it's not this sort of NRA yes or no question. He's a guy that's studied the Constitution. So to say that he believes there's an individual right.
If you're a lawyer, though, and stop me if I'm wrong.
Guilty.
If you're a lawyer here, though, shouldn't you wait to go to Iraq before you've made your policy up? I mean, don't you want to find the... I mean, if facts change in a case... Doesn't that affect the case if the facts change?
Absolutely. But to think that he doesn't have a strategy to go in, I would hope somebody's made up their minds about what they think about Iraq when they've been in the Senate for a couple of years. I mean, what I hear you implying is that you shouldn't have an opinion. Of course you should have an opinion. And if he learns something astounding, he's open to refining his position.
It sounds very Jimmy Carter-ish. Oh, it could be this way, and then it could be that way, but then on the one hand and on the other hand.
But on the other hand, wouldn't you want a candidate that is... You know, that would change their mind? I mean, changing your mind is not a bad idea.
I don't want someone
idea.
Who's going to be totally closed off, but I don't think you can be so on the one hand, on the other hand, that you never make a decision. And one thing that I have found with him in Illinois is he wants to be liked. I think that can be fatal in a candidate dealing on an international scene.
Junie Bartopinka and Chris Voronis, they have been our Republicans in hour number one. Our Democrats, Dan Johnson Weinberger and Joe Ellen Lynn from Valparaiso, Indiana's School of Law, Valparaiso University. And we're going to continue with them in hour number two on radio. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red!
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. We continue with our number two, and we welcome Republicans Judy Bartopinka, former state chairman of the Illinois Republican Party and longtime elected official in the state of Illinois. Chris Voronis is her second here this evening. He is a lifelong Republican as well, and he is a public relations executive. Our Democrats tonight, Dan Johnson Weinberger, he is a political activist, and Jo Ellen Lind, and she is the she's with Valparaiso University School of Law, and she's the associate dean, and she joins us for her first appearance on our program. Two Republicans, two Democrats, talking about the race for President of the United States. In an hour number one, we talked primarily about foreign policy, and we talked about Barack Obama, his trip to Afghanistan and to Iraq, and of course later this week he's going to be going to Great Britain and France and Germany, and he's going to be giving a speech in Germany, and people are already saying, well, no, you can't go to the Brandenburg Gate, because if you did that, it would look like you're trying to upstage Ronald Reagan and John F. Kennedy, so you can't do that. So he's going to go elsewhere. But Chris Voronis, Mr. PR wizard that you are,
yeah.
I mean, is there any doubt in your mind that, I mean, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people there, and that is the picture that's going to be going all over the world?
Probably. Barack knows how to draw a crowd. You have to give him that. So too bad all those people who show up won't be voting in the election, though.
But again, his argument is that this is part of changing the image of America abroad.
Yeah, and I think McCain has got some credibility on that front, too. Look, John McCain is not George Bush, and I think the guy on the street, be he or she in the United States or in Europe or in Asia, recognizes that.
I got to follow up with our public relations expert. In this campaign that's been going on thus far, if you were a referee, would you stop this fight at this moment in time? Would you? We're going to talk about how you get around it, because in hour number one we talked about how does McCain recover. But if you were a referee, would you stop this fight already based on what's happened thus far?
Well, I don't think the election's really started. I don't think you haven't seen any fireworks, any real punches. I mean, I think you've seen some skirmishes on both sides.
Well, I think the election started long ago.
Yeah, and look, on the
Dan, what's your reaction to that same question?
On the PR front, we are wiping the floor with John McCain.
But why isn't it a blowout in numbers?
It's not over.
Why isn't it a blowout?
Why is it not a blowout in numbers?
Because there's a significant group of people that engage for the first time in October. And of the people that are engaged now, I think Barack is wiping the floor with McCain. But the fear is, or the risk is, I should say, that of the people that engage late for the first time, to make sure sort of the base instincts don't pull them away from us.
Judy, would you stop the fight if you were referee here?
No. I think that, you know, I think it has started, you know, in terms of the election. I mean, this is the real thing. It's not dragging its feet at all. But I think that the longer it goes on, that Barack has more to lose. Part of the problem is that people, you know, are very fickle. The electorate's very fickle. They will tire of this constant Barack barrage. What's your latest trick? What's the latest thing you want to bring up? And I think John McCain has more staying power. And I think ultimately people feel more confident with him and feel more comfortable with him and ultimately will go with him.
Jo Ellen?
Well, I just don't think that's borne out by what we know about young voters that are being brought into the system for the first time. And really, I think about McCain as sort of a Johnny One Note. And that gets pretty old after a while. And it certainly doesn't help him when President Bush does things that undercuts his position as sort of the leader on national security, the leader on foreign policy. I'm wondering what he's thinking about George Bush right now when we're talking to Iran. We're talking about having some possibility for withdrawal from Iraq. That's not very supportive of John McCain, and I don't think that helps him communicate with other people. To me, it's another public relations disaster for him.
Well, the more separation there is between McCain and Bush, the more it benefits McCain. And again, John McCain is not George Bush in terms of foreign policy, in terms of his service in the military. Stances on the social issues. McCain's got credibility. He can stand on his own. And I don't see how he'd be Johnny One Note, as you called him. The guy went on a limb, not just on the Iraq war, but on immigration, on taxes and spending, went up against his own party. If you're looking for leadership and the definition of leadership, I would say that's it.
But again,
says he will do.
How do you get back? How do you continue to make that case at a time when it seems, again, at this moment in time, it seems that the Obama image machine, and I know a lot of people are upset, you know, what does he really stand for? He's all talk. I mean, all of that may be true, but that's, the reality is he's still stealing the show. And what you're saying is stealing the show is not going to be good enough for him to go all the way.
Let me
That's
say
your position, right?
Well, I mean, you never know. It's still 15 weeks, but just on that young voters thing, mm-hmm. let me tell a quick anecdote if I could. I went to this young store called Urban Outfitters today. 2 years ago, they had a T-shirt that said "Voting is for old people," and they got in hot water for it. Today, they have shirts with Barack Obama's face on it that they're selling. The Audacity of Hope is one of their books they sell along with their How to Play Beer Pong games. So there's something going on with young voters.
And it was exciting, but whether or not it will hold, because young voters have a tendency not to go and vote.
That is changing. And look at the primaries.
I refer you back to Rock the Vote MTV.
Are you confident that the young people who have voted for him already, do they know there's another election coming?
Yeah, they're coming out.
I
think the enthusiasm gap is real, and I think it matters.
Yeah.
And if you see the machine on the ground, I mean, the organization on the ground, it's amazing. People know how to get out the vote.
Guys, I'm sorry.
I saw a letter to the editor.
In 2004, I heard the same thing, these adjectives, excitement, enthusiasm, outrage.
Boom.
Outrage. It's just a few points
but
in the states separating.
Rock
the Vote was a failure.
You're really
George Bush was reelected.
I agree with that. But here's my point. When they make the decision that his acceptance speech is going to be held in the football stadium,
75,000 people.
You know there's going to be 75,000 people on the inside. God knows how many on the outside. And the fact and the coincidence of timing.
Yeah, right.
That this is on the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech is incredible.
Right.
I can't even begin to think of the column line inches and the online bits that are going to go into just telling that story between now and then. As a PR guy, this is a PR dream come true, is it not?
Right.
Well, you're asking me, is it hot in Chicago in August? And I would say yes. I mean, Barack Obama does have
brilliant,
star
this
power.
This is a brilliant stroke to go to the football stadium.
Yeah, it's so bold, and it's going to pay off. We've already had a rally with 75,000.
And the
people.
Last guy who did it was John F. Kennedy.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah,
this is going
to
be.
It reminds me of a letter to the editor that I saw that I thought said it all, and it was really kind of very succinct. And it said, usually in a company, when someone starts, in the opening job and stuff like that, within a year or two, they don't get elevated to become, CEO of the company. And I think that's what we're talking about here. There is still just that empty suit type of a problem that he's going to have to deal with.
You do it.
Wishful thinking from our Republicans, I believe. Wishful thinking. 1-800-723-8229. When we come back, we're going to talk about the New Yorker and what's going on in the state of Iowa. Back shortly from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Fayetteville, North Carolina to Sugar Land, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289 on many of America's great radio stations and, of course, on XM Satellite Radio, POTUS 130. We're going to go back to calls in just a moment. But again, Judy, before the break, you were telling us a little bit about something that's going on inside the state of Iowa.
Yeah, I was reading today that Senator Grassley, who's the senior Republican senator there, and apparently the right wing of the party there has voted to deny him the ability to lead the delegation to the Republican National Convention, and basically have just kind of dumped all over the guy. And it's a sad day. I mean, the guy's an honorable man.
Yeah.
And I don't quite understand why you'd want to do that to someone who's been there for multiple terms, has led the party well, has obviously done well, or he wouldn't have been reelected that often. And not to allow him to go, that's very insulting.
What's happening within the more conservative element of the party, those that have always had reservations about John McCain, not exclusively evangelicals. I mean, there's others that don't like him or have never liked him for a variety of reasons.
I think they're still there.
Okay, but are none of them coming home? I mean,
I would hope that they would be coming home, because what are the alternatives? To have Barack Obama president? Do you really want that as a Republican? I don't think that's doable. John McCain is a good, solid Republican. He has been. He's always been there. He has always supported the ticket, and it's time for Republicans to support him.
Chris, what's happening with the right wing?
The right wing, at the end of the day, will come out for McCain. To have Jerry Falwell come out and support you before he passed away says something about the McCain candidacy. And I think the distrust is different with McCain. I think it's thinner than, say, with George H.W. Bush, a classic country club Republican who never, ever was trusted as a candidate, as vice president, or as president. So I think the conservatives eventually will come home because on the issues that matter most to them, mm-hmm. okay, very parochial voters, right. McCain has been solid.
Joe Ellen, how much of a problem is the Hillary voter to the election of Barack Obama?
I think it's an issue that has to be dealt with. I think that Hillary voters are coming around, and part of it has to do for the same reasons that Chris was talking about.
Were you for Hillary earlier, or are you,
you've
been for Obama?
I've been for Obama, and I sort of go against the demographic. I'm 57, I'm a white woman, I'm a Democrat, and I was for Obama from the beginning for a lot of different reasons.
What were the reasons?
I worried about her electability. I worried about her ability to bring new people into the party. I thought her negatives were going to be very high. And she didn't really speak to me as a sort of woman's rights person in terms of her life history. But I think I understand women who do feel that her life history spoke to them. And so my mom and I, as I've talked about before, had long conversations about this. She was a strong Hillary supporter.
But the intensity of women, and not exclusively women,
right.
but the, you know, the blue collar voters,
right.
I mean,
right.
You know, for the last, you know, couple of months of the campaign, you know, Tuesday night after Tuesday night, when Hillary was handing him his lunch, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the same demographics that made her a winner for, you know, the last seven or eight, you know, primaries in a row.
Right.
I mean, do you view that is still a problem? I mean, is there Hispanic enthusiasm for Barack Obama?
I think that is less of a problem for Barack. I think women are less of a problem because if they're driven primarily by choice,
right.
you know, choice is clear.
Right.
But I do think the problem in the primaries was less a blue collar that wasn't coming to Barack and more an Appalachian problem. And I think that region is a challenge for Barack to turn over. But I don't think I think there's a lot of talk about blue collars not coming for Barack. I think that was more confined to Appalachia.
She carried the, you know, major states, Appalachia notwithstanding. I mean, they were part of it. But these are major states that the Democratic Party has
right.
to carry to win. And I don't know that Barack brings those people back. I mean, you know, I always go back to my polling, which is over at the food store when we argue over the vegetables and stuff like that, and people tell me. And they're telling me that Hillary would have been a stronger candidate.
But are they?
And that's fine with me because I think Barack is beatable. And if you're a Republican, you want to beat him.
Does that mean that they're not going to vote for Barack Obama?
I think that a number of them may stay home. I think the number of them may stay home. And I do. And I think there's going to be Republicans on the other side who are going to stay home because they distrust McCain. That they both bring a certain amount of distrust and unhappiness to this campaign, which is really unusual.
But is that... Will that be offset? Not necessarily, you know, voter for voter, but is that going to be offset by moderate to liberal Republicans? And there are still some out there.
Oh yeah,
who
an army of one here, you know,
who may be more comfortable with Barack Obama. They may like Barack Obama. They may understand the historic significance,
right. mm-hmm.
and it will be the spirit of the Republican Party of the 1960s,
yep.
which was responsible for the passage of the Civil Rights Bill, not Southern yep. Democrats.
That's right.
I think
is there a piece of that that's out there?
There is an enticement there, moderate to liberal Republicans. So and yes, they are still out there. We'll find this very seductive.
I read it. There was an op-ed by Eisenhower's daughter, I think, that said, hey, the Eisenhower Republicans, we've been without our party for 30 years, and we want to be part of the Obama coalition. That's what we feel an appeal towards.
Yep.
I was blown away when I was walking precincts in Northwest Indiana for Obama, the number of Republican men in their 50s who indicated they were strong Obama supporters, and they weren't Operation Chaos people. It was amazing.
All right, let's go to Kay, listening to us in Chicago on WLS. Kay, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I was telling your screener, I'm not that politically savvy, but, and I like Obama very much. I think he's a wonderful speaker. He seems like a very pleasant fellow, but I wouldn't vote for him. I think when politics are concerned, as smart as he may be, I think he's naive when it comes to speaking to world leaders. They tell him what he wants to hear, and he hears what he wants to hear. I think McCain's been through the mill over the years, and he knows the difference between what they say and what they're thinking of doing. And not, I think McCain is more of a chess player, and Obama is more of a checker player. And regardless of what happens today or tomorrow regarding troop withdrawal, I'm concerned about tomorrow. The Iranians and the Afghanistans and Pakistanians and who knows who else are still not going to be our friends tomorrow, and this problem's not going to be solved tomorrow. And in the long haul, I just feel better going to bed at night with McCain at the helm.
You know,
okay, thank you very much for your call. Go ahead.
I think she puts it well.
There's something really interesting, because I think on the substance...
She sounded pretty astute to me.
Yeah, yeah. Right. She said she's not political savvy. Come on, she identified like five countries. That's more than the average bear. But it's really interesting, because I think, and maybe you'll concede, that on the substance, I think Barack's position on how to wage the war on terror and to elevate Afghanistan and to bring Iraq down is right. But there's a perception out there that, you know, somehow because McCain... maybe because he's been around longer or because he, you know, served honorably, he's smarter and they're in a better position to do it. And there's some disconnect between, you know, not being accountable for the strategic failure of not having the head of Osama bin Laden invading Iraq instead of taking out al-Qaeda, and this perception that Republicans are still better at this game. It's this weird gap, which, you know, is a source of frustration as a Democrat to me. And it's almost like, you know, we don't get enough credit for... well, calling for a change in substantive policy.
Oh, you're sounding also, like you'll Wesley probably, Clark.
You'll probably be scratching your head when McCain runs over Obama on foreign policy about why that is and why, like this caller, feels for some reason just better knowing that McCain would be behind.
It's in her gut. She knows
it's in her gut. And it's the same reason why that Hillary ad, the 2 a.m. call, was so effective, because it brought out
it was effective for McCain. It was effective for McCain.
And for
Hillary. She was making the case for McCain.
Eventually. But for herself,
too. For herself, it was a good commercial.
She was the one that said he wasn't qualified to be commander-in-chief.
She said that. Right, she did.
She did.
That's right.
And now, well, whatever.
McCain didn't say that. No Republican said that.
She did him a favor.
Right. There are a lot of people who feel in their gut that the Republican administration's been like a loose cannon on the deck of foreign state. And, you know.
I think it
may.
Yeah,
but I think in this particular case, I don't think, you know, when you get right down to it, I don't think people are going to be voting for parties. I think what we have here with McCain, you know, moving over to you know, to crossing the aisle, Obama trying to do the same thing. They're both trying to erase the lines between the parties, because when it comes right down to it, you know, they're each going to, if the election were today, they'd each have 45% of the vote. The election in this country is about who can pick up, you know, 5.1% of the vote. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the question is, which means, and it drives, you know, a lot of politicians crazy and people crazy when I say it, but the reality is, it's going to be about image and personality.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. You either like the guy or you don't like the guy. You either think he's ready or he's not ready. You either like his wife or you don't like his wife. These are the issues they're going to decide this race. So imagery, you know, having 75,000 screaming people, you know, in the stadium in Denver with maybe another 10 or 15,000 outside, wow, this is, I should be part of this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because people like to belong, and people do like to be on the winning side.
Right.
And that is the perception of the guy who gives the speech before 75,000 people, and the other guy who, unfortunately, for whatever reason, you know, can't read the you know, the teleprompter.
Right.
Even though he has a more compelling story. We also have here, however, we also have two people who both have interesting stories. One is a little more compelling and dramatic than the other. And then, of course, you have the big divide, which I think is the ultimate divide that will decide this election, and that is generational. It's going to be a which generation can turn out the vote. Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8229. From coast to coast and border to border, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. We've been on the air for 28 years. We're still going. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From coast to coast and border to border, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations and XM satellite radio. Joining us this evening, Jo Ellen Lind is here. She is the Associate Dean of Valparaiso University's School of Law, making her first appearance, and she's going to take us a little inside Indiana politics in just a little bit because it is in Valparaiso, Indiana. Judy Bartopinka joins us. She is the former state chairman of the Republican Party. She ran for governor against Rod Blagojevich 3 years ago, or a couple of years ago, and also she is one of the most successful female politicians in the state of Illinois. Three-time member of the state treasurer's office, former state senator, state representative, and a journalist, graduate of Northwestern University. Yeah. And Dan Johnson Weinberger joins us, graduate of the University of Illinois and the University of Chicago Law School. And he is he has his own progressive public relations, public affairs consulting firm.
That's true.
And you consult some of the progressive causes in the state of Illinois.
I do.
And what is your pet topic?
Well, one that we should talk about later is a fun one when we talk about the presidential election is an effort to implement a national popular vote so that we don't have these blue states and red states and only 10 states are really important and the rest of us kind of watch and cheer, but that every vote is treated the same.
Chris Voronis also joins us. He is a public relations executive and has been a Republican for most. Did I misstate? Have you been a Republican all your life? Did you come out of a Republican family?
Republican family, Greek immigrant Republicans.
Greek immigrant Republicans.
Yes.
Very good. We have a full board of lights. We have been talking so much. We're gonna tick off all of the callers here if we don't get to them. Joe in Schaumburg, Illinois on WLS and Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce. Hi, panel.
Hi.
Hey, Joe.
Hi.
You know what? I'm sick and tired of hearing that Barack can't carry the blue-collar vote. Let me tell you something. As a union member, I don't know one union member that's going to vote for John McCain because of his horrible, horrible record as far as union issues go. Don't take my word for it. I looked it up tonight, AFL-CIO.com. Horrible record. Barack Obama has a 98% voting record as far as union issues
we'll
go.
We'll see what happens when you go in the polls. You also wanted to comment on the New Yorker controversy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do. I think that it did go overboard. But a question for Joe Ellen. You're from Indiana?
Yeah.
Would you like Evan buying a ticket?
I think it'd be very interesting.
Because, Mr. Baronis, who do you think John McCain will pick and who do you want him to pick?
I think he needs a strong conservative. I think.
But I'll tell you who I think it's going to be.
Well, let's let him finish the question that you asked.
What do you want?
We'll come back to you, Joe.
I think Governor Pawlenty would be a good choice. There's varying opinion about Governor Crist, but I think a governor and a strong conservative would shore up his ticket.
Would you like a Greek vice president again?
We've had a dubious.
He's getting married.
Yeah, right.
He's getting married.
Here's what's going to be, I think, for both. I think John McCain, Mitt Romney.
That's a wound.
Well,
it's
tough.
Mr. Pinker, you are. He's the top. He's in the top
of the
list right
now. I hear you.
And Barack Obama. I like Evan Biden, Joe Allen, but I think it's going to be Joe Biden, who I also like.
Yeah, I think it's Joe Biden too. I agree with
would
you.
Would it be? I think Biden is. But I think Jack Reed. The fact that he's been with him.
He doesn't want it.
They all say that.
They all say that. But if he was asked, he'd probably do it. There has been some discussion of Evan Biden. He was certainly a hot property, a couple of weeks ago, was on one of the Sunday morning shows today. In your view, is Indiana gettable for Barack Obama?
Yes, I think it is. And I probably wouldn't have said that a month ago. The polling data, talking to people, seeing what he's doing with his organization on the ground, putting somebody like Biden on the ticket, if he would make a huge difference there. I think it's a possibility.
And I agree with you, not only because of the strength of Northwest Indiana, which is certainly a very strong Democratic hold, which is, again, a very large African-American population. But again, certainly if Evan Biden were on the ticket, I think it definitely makes it happen. And the other piece of this is the Republican that he is that you see him in pictures with and he references is Dick Lugar.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and there's even suggestions as to whether Lugar would end up in that cabinet. So
I hope he would.
Clinton couldn't carry Indiana, Bubba, simultaneously the first black president. If he couldn't pick up Indiana, I don't think Barack Obama.
But you know what? Barack's.
What about with Biden on the ticket?
He was governor and senator, very, very popular elected official.
Judy?
Yeah, no, I think with Biden on the ticket, Biden is a very viable candidate, and it puts Indiana, into play.
Now, we should mention, by the way, for those that don't know politically around the country, you're not a fan of Mitt Romney because when you were running for governor, he made a promise to you that he was going to deliver money to you, and he never delivered it.
Well, he was the head of the Republican Governors Association, and he did not help people who were running as Republicans for governor. He took the money and ran and put it into early primary states.
So we know why you dislike him.
Yeah, he took care of himself.
But who else? Who was the running mate in your view?
I'd like to see Charlie Crist. I think he's very, very good. I think, that we do have governors who would be extremely good. I think it might be kind of interesting, to see Bobby Jindal.
Really?
Yes. I mean, from a standpoint of age, he is equal or a little bit younger than Barack Obama, but has a much heavier resume than Barack has. Why not?
What would you think of Bobby Jindal? Let's take a moment. For those people, Bobby Jindal is Indian extraction, American Indian,
Indo-American.
Southeast Asian.
Indo-American.
Yes, right. Right.
Indo-American.
He's an Indian, yes. He's an Indian.
New Delhi, you know.
If I continue to clarify this, I'm going to get myself in trouble. So I'm going to just stop singing.
Right.
I think most people know who he is. He's very young. He's very conservative. He's from Louisiana. But he's very, very young, and he even looks younger than he is.
He's 37.
But what does he do if there is a Indian on the ticket? We're talking about perception, visualization, and everything else.
I think it'd be...
What does it do to the body politic?
I think it'd be great. I think it'd be a smart move by McCain. I think it helps to, you know, change the perception of the U.S. among the world. I think the idea that, you know, we're sort of doing cowboy crusades for no real apparent purpose, I think that starts to go away. And I think it'd be a smart Republican move because it says, hey, Republicans can be about change in the future and, you know, smart, driven, younger generation as well.
What do we know about the Indian vote?
It has a tendency to be Democratic, but it kind of is AC/DC. It kind of goes both ways.
Pakistanis tend to be more Republican, right?
I think they have a tendency to be more Democrat, but given the opportunity to vote for one of their own, I think then the AC/DC switches to Republican, and they would be there not only in votes, but with big bucks. They would be putting money out there for Bobby Jindal.
Yes.
And now, what does it do to the right wing of the party, who are huge fans of Bobby Jindal? I mean, does he...
Brings them home.
Joe Ellen, what about it?
I think I'd still go for Chris if I were...
Because he gives you,
I think
he guarantees a state that you need.
I think he gives you a state that you really need. Yeah.
And you don't think he would have it without Crist?
I think he gets Florida no matter what.
I think Florida, right. Yeah. But I think Crist is the safer choice.
I think Jindal is too young, almost undercuts McCain's criticism of Obama.
Right,
and almost,
right.
it would be tantamount to Obama picking Hillary.
It would
undercut his whole message of change.
Right.
Because of the difference in fundraising ability, how significant would it be if Crist were on the ticket? How much could he assist within the Greek community of raising money? Because it's a very wealthy community.
Wealthy community, big restaurant owners. There could be a lot of in-kind donations to campaign volunteers. You know that.
Lots of baklava.
Right.
Lots of baklava, yeah.
No, but really, I mean, what impact would it have? I mean, that has to be a factor because, you know, McCain had like his biggest fundraising, month, I think, last month, $25 million, and Obama did $52 million or something like that. So, I mean, there is this
McCain and the RNC beat out Obama and the DNC.
Because you take all your federal lobbyist money, all your big corporate money.
Oh, and Obama doesn't take any. Like partners in law firms can get
Let us go. We're heading back to the
Unbundled.
Barack Obama's change in reform.
Folks, we're heading to Redding, California. Daniel is listening to us on KQMS. Northern California, go ahead.
Hey, how's everybody?
Okay.
Good. Pretty good.
All right. Early on I was kind of interested in Obama. You know, he's talking about change, but I got lost because he never did say what he intended to change. You know, I've been out here for a long time. I listened to the word change, and I'm not seeing anything.
How about
a lot of it I'm seeing, particularly it's getting into the same old type politics.
How about tax policy, cutting taxes for people who make less than $150,000 by rolling back the Bush tax cuts on the wealthiest people in this country?
Bill Clinton promised the same thing.
And Bill Clinton delivered.
Daniel,
go ahead.
Class tax cut.
Follow up, Daniel. Go ahead.
I listened to that particular thing, but the thing that scares me is there's no president, don't care who he is, that can do anything until Congress makes the policy. And it's a guarantee Congress is not going to do that.
Oh, you betcha.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call. We're going to move on. Let's take John in Aurora. You're on WLS, and you're on Coast to Coast.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir. I basically wanted to say that despite Obama's magnificent speechwriters, despite the recruits from Hollywood, despite the public relations campaign, which I'm sure is making Eddie Bernays and Joseph Goebbels' smile from their icy perch in the Ninth Circle right now,
he
has absolutely no extemporaneous ability to synthesize ideas and to convey them without a teleprompter in front of him, and that's going to be conveyed very apparently when he faces John McCain in the debates. John McCain is a much better extemporaneous speaker. He is a much funnier man. He is self-deprecating, and he is much more congenial. And I think that that is going to trounce Obama if he actually faces him one-on-one in a town hall situation as McCain has proposed.
John, we are going to we're going to a break, but we're going to respond to you, and we're going to ask Chris Voronis to explain Edward Bernays, who Mr. Bernays is, when we come back. He's not the sauce guy, but again, an interesting story. The father of American public relations. You'll hear more about him when we come back.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Quickly, Edward Bernays.
Edward Bernays, as you noted, is the founder of public relations, the American style of public relations.
He used the term,
and his whole philosophy was organizations, companies can get more credibility if someone else talks about them rather than them speaking about themselves through advertising.
Also, you ready for this? In the turn of the century, again, the first person to use the term public relations, his early clients were Henry Ford and Thomas Edison. He did the rollout on the electric light bulb and the Ford and the Model T. How's that for a client list? Okay.
Wow.
Let us go back to calls now that we've given you this little history lesson in American public relations. Jim in South Elgin on WLS and Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
Good evening, everybody. I've had the chance to speak to a lot of Obama supporters. And unfortunately, a lot of them aren't very well schooled in history. When I tell them about the end of the Carter era, where interest rates were 17-19%, and unemployment was twice what it is today. These people look at me like the deer with the headlights in its eyes because they have no clue how things used to be. And a lot of it's because of the media and because of poor education. And it's a problem because people are,
In a campaign, I mean, you may be correct in your assessment, but in a campaign, campaigns are about the future. And you are right. And by the way, I would say this for both parties, both political philosophies. You don't pick up a lot of votes if you're talking about the past.
Right.
Yeah, but see, that's why you have to use soundbite, things like, I don't want Carter 2. Because they say, I don't want Bush, again, Bush 3. Well, McCain is right, saying, I don't want Carter 2.
Well, that's true, but half the population doesn't even know who Jimmy Carter is.
And gee,
that's true.
And I don't want Coolidge 2. At some point, if you're going back to the presidency, I think Clinton's looking pretty good.
Coolidge won his re-election, Dan.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you. I don't want him 3.
Let us go to Mike listening to us on KXLY, one of our oldest affiliates in Spokane, Washington. Go ahead.
Thanks, Bruce. Actually, I'm in Sandpoint heading back to Spokane, Andre, heading back to 7:30 Mass in Spokane.
Very
Congratulations,
good.
28 years.
Yeah, we're going to keep doing it until we get it right.
Well, I think it's pretty doing good. I'd just like to bring up
I think KXLY has been with us for about 12, 15 years now. So
that's good, thank God. Bring up the idea of Senator McCain choosing his vice president nominee sooner, the sooner the better, mm-hmm. to get focus back on him early next week or the week after, because with Obama in Iraq, all the attention's there. McCain get his nominee out sooner the better, Vice President.
You sure you don't have a side career in public relations, sir?
No, the
timing is something, but again, what McCain wants to do is he wants to see what decision Obama makes. Now, again, according to what I've read, is that Obama's created a very short window as to when he's going to do it because he doesn't want to get lost by the Olympics, which start in a couple of weeks. So really, everyone is expecting, and by the way, he also said he wants to do it before the convention. So it is likely that Obama is going to make his choice in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Which is then going to give McCain quite a bit of time,
because
he doesn't want to get trapped by the Olympics either.
I was thinking McCain should do it sooner. The sooner, the better.
I suggested a couple of months ago that McCain should have done it long ago, a couple of months ago.
Yeah. Okay, I just thought to bring it up.
Good idea. Thanks very much. Always nice to hear from you. Let's go to Jack in Springfield, listening to us tonight on the internet. Go ahead, Jack.
Bruce, first I want to say that I love your show. I listen every Sunday, and
it's always
great to hear Judy Bartfinko.
I love my Springfielders. I miss you guys because you're super.
Well, you miss this one especially, but
yeah.
that's for another radio show.
I guess.
You had a caller earlier that had it almost correct. Obama just constantly with the change is really interesting. He's done a good job with it. But he has backpedaled on so many issues, and we all know, that there's going to be a ton of advertising that McCain won't have anything to do with just prior to this election, and they're going to bring up those issues, and he's going to look bad. That's all there is to it. One other point, and I don't think a lot of the young people that have been to the rallies for Obama are going to actually turn out and vote. I think it's going to be the standard older population of this country that's going to elect the next president, and I dearly hope that it's John McCain.
Joellen?
I think they're going to turn out and vote based on my experience with them. We had a problem in my county with the polls having to be kept open later by court order, and there were people desperate to vote who'd never been registered before. So I think this really is really a change, nothing like we've seen before.
We glossed over the controversy this week about the New Yorker. Was that a low blow, Chris Varonis? Again, back to a public relations thing.
Well, was it a low blow? I think one thing that could have reinforced their point of satire was to have a disclaimer to title the article to give it some context. But to me, the real issue is just sort of this dim-witted liberal kind of just take on American politics, with Obama and Michelle Obama. I mean, I think Obama's got a reason to be upset. It's troubling for him that the double digits Americans think that he's Muslim.
You know,
I thought it was terrible. I really thought it was terrible. And, you know, most people don't read the New Yorker. It's just a niche, well, because it's a very liberal kind of a niche magazine. It's not commonly read. And so as you go around and look at bookstores or wherever this thing is sold, that's what people are going to see. They're going to see that cover,
and they're
going to stand. And they're going to vote accordingly.
Reaction, Joe Ellen.
I thought it was beneath the New Yorker, and it wasn't funny. It wasn't satire.
No, it's terrible.
I think it's a great publication. I love Rick Hertzberg, and it was an attempt to be funny and sort of making fun of right-wingers. But it didn't really hit.
It didn't, yeah, but it can bite you on the nose, and I think it bit.
On that note, we want to thank our Republicans, Judy, Barr, Topinka, and Chris Veronis. Folks did a nice job carrying the water for the Republicans tonight. The Democrats, represented this evening by Dan Johnson Weinberger, a political consultant, and Joellen Lind. She is the Associate Dean at Valparaiso University School of Law. Her maiden voice. Let's give her a nice big
hand. Hey, all right. Well done.
On Beyond the Beltway. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Wilbur Entertainment. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Stephanie Lesche for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at this same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.